Humble Holding Up is sponsored by the North Coast Co-op and Humboldt Hydroponics. You know, the North Coast Co-op, no mystery that it's the favorite grocery store of Humboldt Holding Up. We go there for lunch all the time. Andrew, I know you love the solids.
Also the poke bowls. But I shouldn't say that out loud, because then there'll be a rush on the poke bowls.
Well, anyway, whatever it is that you love, they've got it there at the North Coast Co-op. Go check them out at both Arcata and Eureka.
And Humboldt Hydroponics, they are located at 1302 Union Street. That is right next to the Broadway Cinema, unless, in case you don't have a map in your brain. You can visit them there, and their knowledgeable staff will help you with all your growing needs. Humboldt Hydroponics, locally owned and operated. It's Humble Holding Up, the podcast for folks, humble folks even.
Probably like, almost exclusively.
I mean, maybe not even for them. It's my name's Andrew Goff. Yeah.
And I'm Stephanie McGeary. I'm very excited today because on the show, we're going to be talking to Patrick Cleary, who we know a little bit because he's the guy who signs our paychecks, technically. Well, yeah. So disclosure on
full
that.
Disclosure.
He is the owner of Lost Coast Communications, also former executive director of the Humboldt Area Foundation. Yeah. But mostly today, we're going to be talking to him about his role as the organizer of Humboldt Folklife Festival, which is returning to Blue Lake this coming weekend.
And if you've never been to the Humboldt Folklife Fest, first of all, it's in Blue Lake, so it's always just the weather's a little bit nicer out there.
It's always
and
nice.
They have it at Del Arte in the amphitheater, and that I would argue is one of the more magical stages that we have in this county. And
absolutely.
So, you know, we lost the festival, as we did with many things, for 2 years because of the pandemic. This year, it's coming back in a limited capacity, but some of the most favorite acts of the festival are returning. You got Absinthe Quintet. You got Absinthe Quartet.
Quartet, now.
I gotta update my math constantly on that one. Huckleberry Flint. I don't need to sell it because we have Patrick Cleary here, and he bleeds folk.
Yeah.
Let's get him in here, and he can drop some passion for the music.
Drop
and,
some folky knowledge on us.
Yeah. So come on in, Patrick.
Hey guys.
Hey.
Hi, Patrick.
How's it going?
Good.
So Patrick, where are you coming to us from? Because
I know,
you know, we're recording this at Thursday afternoon, and but you I pitched one time to you said no, we got to do it this time, which leads me to believe that you're still scheduling things in your life, which I shame on you. I don't think you should be doing that.
No, I'm 2 weeks out from surgery now. I mean, I'm like, you know just routine things, but you know, there's some business stuff, some folk life stuff, some medical stuff, some dog stuff. And
so people don't know, you just had a hip replacement surgery. And
yeah, I have a bionic hip.
What does that procedure entail? we'll just go into your medical right off the top.
Yeah. No, they just go in and, you know, replace the top of your leg bone and the bottom of your hip bone with titanium ball and socket. And it's really simple. Yeah,
they just go on in, just
well, takes about an hour.
Yeah.
Wow.
But wow. we joke about it, but you're up and walking soon after the surgery, right?
I was walking that night. I'm now up to walking about 20 minutes a day.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah, unassisted. No walker.
That's great. Okay. Wow. Yeah. And probably I imagine that it is alleviating some pain, right? I mean, getting this.
Yeah.
The
pain was significant.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you're good enough to walk between Del Arte and the Lager Bar because coming up, you know, so like a good portion of the time we've done this podcast, you know, has been devoted to like chronicling the things we as a community lost as a result of the COVID bummer. these days, thankfully, we seem to get to talk more about things that are coming back. And this coming week, by the time this airs, an event that I know is near and dear to your heart, Patrick, is coming back after 2 year hiatus. Humboldt Folklife Festival will return July 14th, 15th, and 16th in a slightly reduced capacity. It's 3 days instead of the usual week-long fest, but you're doing it.
We're doing it all outdoors, you know, in out of caution for COVID. Yeah.
COVID still thing.
Just the 3 days and, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and the Saturday off free all day festival, slightly scaled down to one stage instead of two, still 9 hours worth of music. And so,
we'll get to like the whole like rundown of things there and there, but just like, how does it feel to be able to offer again, a place for community, you know, to gather, drink beer, listen to music. We're all going to look at each other in the face and see what the last 2 years have done to each other. How does it feel?
Well, you know, I'll be somewhat honest. I've done this for 20 plus years now.
Yeah.
Wow. I wouldn't mind if somebody else wanted to offer it. I feel like, you know, it's a good time to probably pass the torch, but having
accepting
said that,
applications. Yes.
Yeah. It seemed that the only way it was going to happen was if I called some of the old crew together and said, come on, guys, we need to make this happen.
Yeah.
And then, I think it's important, just to back up even further. I mean, and Stephanie, you may not know much about this, but, you know, the Folklife Society has been around for over 40 years now. It's really a place to celebrate participation in music and dance. You know, that the idea, you know, not that we just go and watch somebody else do this, but that we, you know, we have a chance to perform, we have a chance to dance, we have a chance to, you know, make it accessible to people. And so that's really the mission. So, you know, it's really, sort of a celebration of our local music community, which is really exceptional in a lot of ways. I mean, we are blessed with a lot of musicians, and I think it's really important to remember that, to give thanks for that, and to come together. And I think one of the things about the Folklife Festival is that a lot of the working musicians never get a chance to see each other play because they're too busy doing their own thing.
True.
Yeah.
But here's a situation where, well, I'm playing at 2 o'clock, you're playing at 5 o'clock. Okay, I'll stick around. Wow, you guys are good. I haven't seen you guys in years. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of becomes this sort of musician community.
Right.
To a large degree. So I'm pretty excited about it. Yeah. I'm excited that it's happening. You know, I think that we will, in fact, pull it off. Last year, unfortunately, we canceled the Buddy Brown Blues Festival just a couple of days beforehand because the COVID situation was getting worse. But I'm hopeful now, you know, with it being outdoors, and obviously, we're encouraging people to even wear masks outdoors. But, you know, I think all the research points to outdoors is significantly safer than indoors.
Yeah.
We're gonna make this happen.
Well, I have to confess, you know, you're saying like that I might not know. I've been around Humboldt for a while, though. I grew up here and I even lived in Blue Lake for some of my childhood. But I have to confess, I'm not even totally sure if I have been to the Folklife Festival. Like, the reason, let me say, is that Blue Lake, especially, like, there are so many festivals in Blue Lake, and like during the summertime, Blue Lake just kind of almost becomes this like one long ongoing festival. Like you said, we have, you know, Bottawatt, formerly Mad River Festival, Folklife, Annie and Mary Days.
It's like Oktoberfest.
It's kind of hard, like June, July through like October. It's kind of hard to know where one ends and one begins sometimes. I'm like, what festival am I at right now? I don't know.
And the Folklife Festival really is part of Badawat.
Yeah.
It's part of the old Mad River Festival, as Delta used to call it.
Right.
We affiliated with them over 20 years ago as part of, you know, this idea of, you know, being able to have them offer more than just theater. We're kind of blessed in a lot of ways because we're really the only outside organization that Del Arte lets use their facilities. Right. And if you've been there, I mean, that the amphitheater is one of the most beautiful spots to see music.
Yeah.
Especially on a nice warm summer day, you know, with the sun setting and Huckleberry Flint up on the stage. Yeah. And, you know, yeah, it's like, you know,
it's always 10 degrees warmer in Blue Lake.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Blue Lake is the best.
Yeah. And so, but there, you know, a lot of people have not been to Folklife. I mean, you know, we get, you know, the amphitheater holds about 300, 350 people. Though I'm pretty sure on the free Saturday, we've had a lot more than that in there.
We won't sell the Blue Lake Fire. Yeah.
We don't know. We're not taking tickets. You know, yeah. Right. We don't know how many people are here.
Yeah, they just wandered in.
But they're having a good time. So,
yeah.
You know, this year, again, just 3 days, but, you know, we used to do some indoor stuff. We've done songwriter nights, we've done international music nights, we've done jazz nights, we've done all sorts of, you know, various things. We did a comedy night 1 year. Mm-hmm. But then the other thing we do on Saturdays, we do workshops and lessons. And right. It's a chance for people to, if you always wanted to play the banjo, you know, here's somebody who's got you started on it, you know, or the fiddle, or, you know, we're going to have a songwriting workshop this year. And then, of course, the all-time favorite, the Beatles sing-along.
Yeah, oh. noted folk band, the Beatles. always brings a crowd. Yeah, Joel's signed up. He's going to do it again.
I believe. Yep.
Okay.
Pretty sure we're working out the last details right now. Who's going to help him out? But yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, and that brings up the question: is what is folk music?
Yeah.
And you know, I think it was Big Bill Brunsey who said, "It's all folk music. I ain't never heard a horse make none of it."
You know, yeah, like for example, I noticed like on the Saturday lineup, you have Mariachi de Humboldt.
Yeah, we're excited about that.
Which I think you know, when your eyes first go over it, you're like, wait a minute, and then but you know as you reason it in your brain, you're like, no, absolutely, that's somebody's folk music for sure.
Yeah, and I think we're very excited that they're coming. They're based out of Humboldt State. It's some students and a faculty advisor. And, you know, and it's brought up an interesting discussion for us about diversity in music. And, you know, I think to some extent, we have been correctly accused of being sort of, you know, a pretty white festival, you know. And I think we're really trying to take a look at that and trying to bring in some more diversity. But I think one of the things, you know, we found is, you know, we do this festival on a shoestring. You know, I think, you know, by the time we pay for the rental, the sound, the publicity, the, you know, sort of expenses and things like that. And we pay the bands, but we don't pay the bands nearly enough. You know, so we're doing this on like, you know, like a little more than $5,000, but you know, it's not a lot of money. And you know, we pay the bands like $100, and, you know, a lot of the, you know, younger bands and people, you know, they have jobs, you know, they can't afford to just take the day off to, you know, give us an hour set for, you know, money when they're losing a whole day's worth of pay.
Right.
And so one of the things we're really going to try to do is, you know, uplift the musicians more and see if we can pay them more money for their efforts. You know, when I first got involved, everybody played for free.
And the
tribute to Folk Life was that we could do a week's worth of music, have over 40 acts, not pay anybody, and have people really mad at me that they weren't asked to play. You know, because everybody, a lot of people do want to play, but I think we're going to definitely be looking at, you know, how do we bring more from, you know, different cultures. We did do a Native American night for a couple of years. And the thing we learned about that was that in the Native culture, music and dance are sacred. They're not for entertainment. They're not to be put up on the stage. You know, they're part of a, you know, a deeply held set of values and culture. And so, you know, we're going to try to revisit that in the future and see if there's something we can do to highlight that in a culturally appropriate way.
Go ahead, Steph.
Oh, I was just going to say, well, with, you know, it seems like it's also important part of Folk Life to be able to keep at least this one, you know, have a free segment, you know, to keep it more accessible for the public. But how do you envision being able to support the bands, offer the bands more financial support in the future? You know, is it just from ticket sales, or how can you do that?
Yeah, we do ticket sales during the week. That helps us pay for the cost right now. I think we're going to do more outreach in terms of sponsorships, more outreach in terms of memberships, and maybe even a little grant writing, you know, because we are a nonprofit, and see if we can, you know, beef up that side of things. And the other part that I think is really important for us that I want to focus on, you know, kind of post-pandemic, is the teaching and the lessons and that aspect of things. You know, I think that again, where we're different than like just a presenting organization is that we want you to play. We want you to pick up your instrument. We want you to sing. We want you to dance. You know, and, you know, actually on the dance part of it, I'm really excited. We're going to have our first barn dance since March of 2020.
Yes, called by Lindsay Battle.
Yes.
Friend of ours.
Yeah. Oh, yes. And the Cider Mill Creek, and it's going to be outside in front of Del Arte out on the street, so that, you know, because, you know, one of the concerns we've had about dances, obviously, is you get a bunch of people inside huffing and puffing. It's probably not great for the COVID spread.
It's, super spreader barn dance,
So we're very excited, and we're going to do that for free.
Well, I thought we would go maybe as you're starting to get into some of the events of the Folk Life, maybe that we would just go, you know, go down the list of the, of the three nights, and you can kind of be the dunking and sell these fights, you know, like on Thursday in the Rooney Amphitheater, you have well, why don't you want to go down the list of bands that you're offering Thursday night?
Yeah, and we're starting a little bit earlier than we used to on Thursday, because we wanted to squeeze an extra band in. So we're starting at 5 o'clock on Thursday the 14th. And I'm really excited because we're making Folk Life history here, where it's going to be our first surf rock.
I was going to say, I didn't know that name, Star Hoppers. I don't know.
Okay. First surf rock. All right.
You know Paul Beatty from...
Yes. From the old people.
So it's Paul and Ross Raleigh, and I can't remember the other fellow's name. So yeah, we're gonna do a little surf rock to warm everybody up.
All right, I'm here for that.
Right,
I love me some surf rock.
Yeah, no, and Paul's a very talented musician. So I really wanted to try to get him in, and that's a new band. that's kind of, you know, come up during the pandemic. Okay. And then we got the Bayou Swamis. So a little Zydeco Cajun action just to get everybody warmed up.
Yeah. Festival veterans.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Very known around here. Yeah.
Yeah. They've probably been around close to at least 25 years, maybe 30.
Yeah.
Old veterans. And then we have another new band that's come up through the pandemic, Canary and the Vamp.
Yeah, we were listening to them a little bit again because we weren't really familiar prior to this. Listening a little bit before before this,
they've been playing out a lot. You know, half of Absinthe in that group,
mm-hmm. right? Yeah, well, you know, Bev Twist, who's the lead singer, was in the Bells of the Levee.
Yeah,
okay. And she's an extraordinary musician. She plays many instruments, and then they've just recruited Alistair Page on the pedal steel.
Yeah.
So they get a little swingy, jazzy, but really fun material.
Yeah. Yeah. Her and John's harmonies sound really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're really excited to have them. Okay. And then of course we get Huckleberry Flint, and we get them 2 days before the Land Trust gig that they have. So, you know, but that's been a tradition. Huckleberry Flint has played our festival, I think, probably every year but one since 2003 or something.
Yeah,
like
and in lots of different iterations, that band has really evolved in their time, at least on the Folklife stage. Yeah.
Yeah. No. I mean, when we first got them in, you know, our friend Mike Dronkers was tugging on my sleeve and said, "Hey, I know these guys. They have a little bluegrass band. You'll like them. You know, can you squeeze them in the festival?" And I said, "What's their name?" He said, "Huckleberry Flint." And look what they've become. So So we're very excited to have them. So that's our Thursday night. We're putting tickets on sale July 1st. So by the time this podcast goes live, HumboldtFolklife.com. And I have to say .com because during the pandemic, we sort of got a little sloppy and we let HumboldtFolklife.org slip and somebody took it.
Okay. Did they take it surreptitiously? Is there something
they took it
horrible there now?
yeah, don't go there. Right. Of course you're going there because I told you not to go there.
Hum.org. Let's see.
That's Andrew.
Nothing. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, don't go there.
Okay.
Yeah. .com.
Yeah. Okay. HumbleFolklife.com. All right.
Yeah. And so then again, as we, you know, to do my Don King and best impersonation and go back to the schedule on Friday, again, barn dance outdoors in front of Del Arte on the street, Lindsay Battle calling and Cider Mill Creek playing, and that's from 4 to 6. That's a free thing. Definitely fun for the kids. Yeah. And that, at 6 o'clock, we're going into the amphitheater, and we've got the Handshakers, who have resurrected themselves, and some good sort of honky tonk Americana country.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we've got another first after that, we've got our first Grateful Dead cover band.
I was gonna say, and it's kind of remarkable it took this long.
Yeah, right? That's actually, a point of pride.
You played a solid defense up until this point, Patrick, but eventually the Deadheads, they overtook you.
Yeah.
At what point does something become traditional? And, you know, if Jerry Garcia died 25 years ago?
I think 94, wasn't it?
Yeah, 95 or something like that. Yeah. So, I mean, I think at this point they've lapsed into the, you know, American tradition.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
You can justify it to yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I'd say yes. So
dead on. Yeah.
Should, you know, between them, and then closing act of Absinthe Quartet. You know, we should have some dancing on Friday night.
Yeah,
and Absinthe, like this is, would you say like Absinthe was one of the first bands to, you know, come along to really challenge the perception of what was going to be allowed in the Folklife Fest?
You know, the first one was the Rubberneckers.
Okay.
The Rubberneckers was the Dylan Does Newport moment.
Okay. Because of going electric and
Yeah. You know, that was when all the old timers looked at me and said, why are these people playing the festival? And all the young people said, who are these people playing the festival? They're great. But, you know, Absinthe, at least, you know, had the traditional instruments. I mean, they still have a banjo.
Yes.
You know, I mean, granted, it's an electric banjo.
Yeah, it's like a Trojan, you know? It's a Trojan horse. And
there's a long tradition of fusion in the traditional music world. And
Absinthe
has definitely done that. And they're a fan favorite, and, you know, definitely good for, you know, getting people up out of their seats. And and they they're all excellent musicians. So
it's especially fun to dance to Absinthe on that slope of the amphitheater. That's so we'll need everyone to sign waivers before you attend the Absinthe show.
Yeah, my doctor says I'm not ready to dance on.
The hip's not that healed yet.
Most definitely not.
All right.
And so then the next day is on Saturday. We're starting the music as we usually do at 11 a.m. Yeah. And we've got the Academy Fiddlers coming with Blake Ritter.
Blake Ritter. I went to high school with Blake, and he was like star fiddler. Yeah, I can't even say that word. He was the star fiddle player all the way back then, and really, really talented musician. So that's exciting. Yeah.
He won some sort of all Ireland fiddle contest.
He did. Yeah, I can't remember what year or the name, but yes, yeah. I do know that he won an award.
So you're kicking off, what are these, like his students?
These are his students.
And an army of his students are going to take the stage and adorably fiddle.
Army might be a strong word, but okay.
That makes it sound a little frightening.
I want people to be ready.
And then Blake will be coming back after a short break to play some bluegrass with Rich Kearns.
I feel like you're skipping over a band, Patrick.
Yeah, now wait a minute. You skipped right over something noon. Yeah. Now, why might that be? I see this noon band, Backseat Drivers. Who might be in that?
Yeah. Who are these bums? Yeah, they're a bunch of old retired white folks trying to play acoustic blues. And yes, that is my band.
How many different bands have you played in on at the Folklife Fest? Sit with that one for a minute.
I think three.
Okay.
Oh, really? Only That's three? It? Okay.
Only three. And I have never played on the Rooney stage.
Okay. Yes, that's true. You're a street stage performer. And proud of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or Annie and Mary Day or the kickoff I've never played on that one. But and the Backseat Drivers have been around since 96 best they can remember. But I only joined I joined right before COVID.
Okay. Yeah.
And they're an acoustic blues band, and so I'm playing blues mandolin.
Wow.
Okay.
Okay. Now talking about some fusion, that's kind of different. Yeah.
It's actually very traditional. If you go back to the 1930s or so, there were a lot of the early bands. You had black mandolin players who were part of the early repertoire.
So what do you end up playing? Like what hole do you fill in the band? What are you strumming? Are you picking out leads on mandolin?
Both, Both. Yeah. It's a lot of rhythm. I actually have a resonator mandolin that I'll be playing. It's kind of like, I think of myself as sort of the rhythm guitar player.
Okay.
And then we've got a slide guitar player, a harmonica player, and a bass player. And and they're two retired doctors and a retired nurse. So we managed to do good COVID protocols while we rehearsed through the last couple of years.
Is there a doctor in the house? Turns out there was. Yeah.
There were two.
Yeah.
What do you think? Is this safe out here? So now Alan Glasseroff and Ann Lindsay and then Frank Anderson on harmonica. And I think it should be fun.
Yeah. Do you sing songs in this group, Patrick?
I sing one song. I sing my famous song about the boss.
Okay.
Yeah. You've heard that, I think.
I've heard that at a Christmas party or two.
Yes. We should say, we Stephanie, I don't know if you know, but Andrew played the Folkwide Festival one year.
Oh, yes.
I'm not surprised. I don't know if I knew that
I was, this is punishment for embarrassment. Okay, yeah. I was riding high on my Who Pooped and Peed on the Bank songwriting credit, and Patrick foolishly asked that if I would play the songwriter night, just assuming if I had done that I had other material to share. It was mostly that, yeah.
So you just played Who Pooped and Peed on the Bank.
Four times.
Yeah, and encore. Yeah,
yeah. Just okay. No,
Andrew's very modest. He was quite good.
I know that he is actually a good musician.
Anyway, so at 2 p.m. we have
the Mariachi de Humboldt.
Yeah,
I'm really excited about that. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Definitely.
Yeah. How big of a band is that?
I think there's six people.
Okay.
This is a serious assault of mariachi sounds on your ears.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we try to do that with the arc of the day a little bit too, is that we start out with the smaller groups and then we start building them bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
Okay.
By the time we get to the end of the day, we're really rocking and rolling.
Yeah.
Within a folk context, of course.
Of course.
And so then at 3 o'clock we have, of course, the Compost Mountain Boys, because it wouldn't be a Folkwide Festival without the Compost.
At least a few times,
Yes.
Yeah, they usually just play once a festival, but they're going strong. And then at 4 o'clock Kingfoot's coming back.
Kingfoot is one of my favorites because it's three stringed instruments. And yet you would think it's a full on, like they produce a big sound for what they have at their disposal.
Yeah, that's well said. Yeah, they really do. They really get people up and going. And then at the point when Kevin stands on his bass,
it's coming. You just sit there waiting for it.
Yeah. And everybody it gets totally excited because he's playing 100 miles an hour while standing on the bass. So it's,
Did he ever, like, I feel like I dreamed this. To confirm for me, this never actually happened, but he never actually had like pyrotechnics shoot out of the head of his bass. Right. I feel like my brain constructed that memory because it really wanted or needed it. But you've never actually seen that, right?
I don't recall that. There's no photographic evidence of that.
we'll put in the word that maybe this is the year.
Yeah. I'll talk to Kevin about it.
Thank you.
For the sound is just so powerful that's what you experienced in your mind.
Maybe that's it. Okay. Yes.
So yeah.
Or maybe something you ate earlier. You
know? Yeah, well, there's also always that.
There's great burrito trucks at every Folklife Festival.
Yes, and we will have food there, once a day. Okay. 5 o'clock, we have a new bluegrass band in the 70s. So, there was a band called Fickle Hill that was a bluegrass band. And that had a number of the old-timers, Brooks Otis, Mike Menides, better known as Spumoni to a lot of people, Gary Grounds, Ken Jorgensen was in it for a short period of time. And they were like the first bluegrass band. Well, a group of younger guys have sort of taken up the mantle and are reviving the name. And it's Michael Walker, you may know, the luthier. Mm-hmm. Colin Trujillo from No Good Redwood Ramblers. His brother Cam, our former K-Hum DJ.
Of course.
And Rob Fowler on mandolin and Britt Smith on fiddle. And they're doing a lot of the same material that the original Fickle Hill did. Okay. And there's some rumor that some of the original Fickle Hill guys make an appearance. Confirmed.
No spoilers, Patrick.
Yeah. Just rumors. That's all we're doing here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then at 6 o'clock we have the Yokels coming back.
All right.
Another festival favorite, Steve Irwin. Just one of the finest performers in Humboldt County music history.
He is astounding to me. He is just a natural on stage. He makes guitar playing look easy. Glenn Nagy playing bass, I think Paul DeMarc is now taking up the chair and the drums.
So once again, Paul DeMarc will play in multiple bands on at a Folk Life Fest.
That's how drummers, you know, they always got to be in a few different things.
I think the record is 7 appearances in a Folk Life Festival. But that was, I think, Marla Joy, I think, set that actually playing.
Okay, oh, yeah, that's okay. He's a good candidate for
that. That makes sense. Yeah. Okay.
And then our final band to rock out the evening, making their Folk Life debut, is Barnfire.
Now, Barnfire, like, they just look like they could kick my ass. just Turtle by himself, I think, is I wouldn't want to mess with these people.
Yeah, you know, I've gotten to know Turtle a little bit. I played some tunes with him at the Lager not too long ago.
And, okay.
He's actually he's kind of a sweet soul, but yeah, he just kind of looks like you don't want to mess with him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he's very nice, but he gives off he has a look. Everyone in that band, it's like you have to look a certain part.
Well, and you know, they're doing the outlaw country thing. I mean, they're doing it. Whalen and the Merle Haggard and that whole sort of thing, and they're doing it well.
Yeah,
they're doing it with feeling. I think Turtle's actually a superb musician. I mean, he can play multiple instruments. He's a great singer. He's got some stage presence. We're very, very excited to have them close up the day, send everybody home tired and happy, you know, in a good Folk Life way. So,
So it sounds like you have you need to not injure you re-injure your hip tapping your toe in this coming week.
That's gonna be tough.
My right toes are okay.
Stick to the right toe.
Okay, all right. That's
so yeah, so I mean, yeah, so everyone should head on out to Blue Lake this coming. I thought we might pivot a little bit and you know just ask you a little bit about, you know, just like how this past 2+ years have been for you. You know, like you're someone who for a lot of years has had to have like an understanding of the various moving pieces of this community through your work at LCCI and the Humboldt Area Foundation. How has it been having to hibernate, not, you know, being out amongst the community these past 2 COVID years?
You know, for me, surprisingly well. And a lot of people are surprised at that, but, you know, in terms of background, I moved here in 97, sort of to hibernate. I mean,
this has all been one long hibernation.
Yeah. I mean, like, I had just finished doing 18 years on Wall Street, and I was trying to get as far away from Wall Street as I could and still be in the U.S. And, you know, found this little sleepy community of Humboldt and thought that I would be able to sit and, you know, play music and write and do things like that. And the pandemic actually kind of brought that back to me to some extent. So, you know, I have, you know, my big projects during the pandemic was been working hard on my bluegrass banjo skills.
Okay.
Yeah. Because we don't have enough bluegrass banjo players around here. also, I did a fair number of dobro lessons.
What is that?
A dobro is basically a steel lap guitar.
Oh, okay, right, all right.
Yeah, you sort of has that slide sound to it.
Right. And, yes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that, you know, kept me fairly well occupied. You know, between that and the dogs, and you know, things. And
yeah,
I still had.
Oh, I was going to say, I note that, you know, perhaps conveniently the pandemic somewhat coincided with you inching into your retirement from the Humboldt Area Foundation.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Good timing on that one.
Yeah. It was actually kind of, you know, I was working part time, you know, through the first year of it or so. And then, you know, I'm still, you know, involved in Lost Coast on the business side of things. And so that, you know, still keeps me somewhat engaged. So, no, life has been, you know, for me, pretty good. And, you know, having joined the Backseat Drivers, that was fun. That has been fun and continues to be fun. We actually have just revived a small bluegrass jam out of Septon Trio on Wednesday nights.
Okay, you're part of that. I saw that on the calendar that they're doing. Septon Trio, just like an open folk bluegrass jam kind of thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to discourage the Grateful Dead heads from, you know, coming in and taking over it. I mean, you know,
good luck with that.
Yeah, we really do want it. You know, like, we want people who know who Flatten Scruggs were and who Bill Monroe was, and, you know, and if you're willing to play that sort of music, then yeah, you know.
Yeah.
It's open, and it's, you know, been a nice, comfortable, respectful scene. So
do you stick your head in at the foundation every so often?
You know, I still give them some advice on particularly on the investment side of things.
Yeah.
But I wanted
to ask, you know, like from time to time, you know, people will ask me, you know, like, what is the Humboldt Area Foundation and what do they do? And, you know, I'll stumble through an answer that I can tell by looking at their face did not help them understand in the slightest what the Humboldt Area Foundation does. Like, for, you know, you spent years as the head of that organization. Like, for people listening here, similarly may wonder, maybe you can give like a brief overview of the one that I always fail to give.
Okay, I'll give it a try without much preparation here.
Okay, yeah.
No, I mean, the Humboldt Area Foundation is a foundation. It's a place where it's a community foundation. So what it does is it gathers up contributions from multiple people, invests the money, and uses the earnings off the investments to make grants to help the community. So it's sort of a hybrid of, I mean, it's a nonprofit. All the money goes to support local community groups. But what it does is, you know, particularly most of the major funds come from when people pass away, and they may leave part or all of their estate to support music, to support animals, to support, you know, seniors. That money goes into a fund. The fund is invested for long-term growth. And as the fund grows, the earnings get to be paid back to, you know, organizations like the Senior Center and Food for People and, you know, all the great organizations, Inc. people that we have here in Humboldt County. Mm. And then in addition to that, they do a lot of, you know, support work for the nonprofits, helping them, you know, with skills to stay involved, education, seminars, and, you know, just basically try to stand up in the community for a lot of good causes. So. Mm.
How many years were you ED there?
I was executive director for a little over seven, and I stayed on for another year and a half as the head of investments. Mm. You know, well, the market's been down this year, so but today, too, yeah. they were up to about $175 million in total as of the end of last year. So yeah. they're not a small organization. Right.
What were some of the things you did there that you were most pleased to have played a part in?
You know, we did a lot of work with Open Door around both the Eureka Open Door and also the Fortuna Open Door project. Actually, the Arcata one as well. We also were involved with the Northern California Indian Development Corporation's redo of the Carson Block building right in Old Town. Mm-hmm. We worked a lot with Southern Humboldt Healthcare, helping them qualify for some federal funding that allowed them to be in a position to raise money for their new hospital. You know, I mean, there were a lot of things, but, you know, there are a lot of big numbers that come out of Humboldt Area Foundation. You know, they give away $6-7 million a year. Yeah. But a lot of it is small stuff.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of scholarships. While we were there, we got a $4 million bequest for Native American scholarships, which is really... try to work on that. And then we started a conversation around race and equity while we were there in the community, which, you know, we did kind of, you know, we started before 2016. We started, just talking to the community about, you know, things that we don't talk about, like, you know, the genocide of the Native American people, the chasing out of the Chinese people in the early 1900s, a lot of the inherent racism that, you know, still is felt to some degree around here.
Yeah, we've had people from the Wiat tribe on this show, and it seemed really, and they've noted, just like, you know, in the last few years, it seems that, you know, the conversations have actually produced fruit that unlike anything that they had previously experienced, where, you know, we are acknowledging things widely that we've kind of known about but not talked about freely. You know, there does seem to be a lot of good movement as far as equity issues in Humboldt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it's easy for me as a white man to say that. But I do think that we still have a ways to go on issues. I mean, again, like, we're starting to take that lens, to the Folklife Festival, as I said earlier. You know, all right, what are we doing to be more diverse and more inclusive? You know, and how do we look at that? And we have some work to do there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think? I mean, would ever, you know? I'm just thinking, like, the term folk, like, is there anything like baked into that term that is that makes it difficult to proceed forward?
I don't think so. I mean, I think, you know, there was if you go there's a great speech that Rhiannon Giddens gave to the International Bluegrass Music Association, mm-hmm. Where she basically talked about, you know, how do we bring diversity back to bluegrass music?
That's a good point.
Not that it wasn't there, but it was kind of pushed aside at some point in time. But if you go back, I mean, a lot of the early folk music was one of the few places where blacks and whites would get together. You know, Bill Monroe, a lot of his mandolin stuff came from a fellow that he studied with and played with as a young man, who was black. A lot of the Carter family tunes were collected by, I'm blanking on his first name now, but this fellow, Mr. Riddle, who drove him around and showed him where all these people were making music. I mean, a lot of the folk music comes from a culturally diverse place, but then it was sort of, especially bluegrass and country, sanitized into a white format for a while. And so now how do you reach out? And I think if you look at some of the bands these days, the Native Daughters is one of my favorite. There's just some really great stuff happening, looking at, more diversity and more fusion of different ideas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like Andrew kind of mentioned earlier, like folk music can be, there's also what's considered like the folk music of different, nations too, different places, different parts of the world. Like folk kind of has a different meaning genre-wise depending on where you are too. And so there are also, you can definitely bring other cultures into it as well.
Yeah, and I think it's been a method for preserving culture, and for, how traditions get passed down.
Right, that's sort of the idea of folk music, really, isn't it? Kind of, it's like story. It's the music. It's just like the music of the people, really.
Preserve history through our stories, through our songs.
Yeah.
There was an Irish writer who I can't remember his name either, but he said that the winners write the history and the losers write the songs.
Yeah, that is pretty good. Yeah, it's downtrodden people often have to resort to singing just to have any joy at all.
Yeah,
and it's the reason the Irish have so much music.
Yes. Yeah.
Patrick. Yeah. Yeah. So we mentioned, Folklife Fest is one thing in Humboldt that's come into like a post-pandemic life. It does feel like right now there's kind of this measured hopefulness amongst community leaders right now. Maybe they're paid to strike that tone, but like, what do you see as being like the more promising data points in Humboldt right now?
I think from an economic point of view, we've got a lot of positive pressures in terms of you have Humboldt or Cal Poly Humboldt now. You have Google bringing in the fiber optic cable and setting up the data center. You have the potential for the fish farm and then the offshore wind projects. You have a lot of, good paying jobs that are going to be created here. I think the challenge is going to be where we house everybody and how we can continue to provide affordable housing in this community. I think that's the biggest stumbling block right now. And, if you look at, just the Gateway project in Arcata, where they, say, yeah, we can build a bunch of houses, and people are like, but you're going to destroy the small town character of Arcata. And, I think we have some grappling to do with that, but we can't, unfortunately, build a wall and keep everybody out and say,
this unfortunately.
Is our...
yeah. Yeah. And the redwood curtain's a little more porous than it was, a few years ago with all the airline travel and,
True.
So I think, I'm optimistic. We live in one of the most beautiful places in the world. We have a very special community. We have a community where it's still sort of small enough that you feel like you can see people you know no matter where you go.
Yeah.
How do we preserve that quality of life? Yet, you know, we need better paying jobs for people. We need to, you know, have people be able to raise a family here. And we need to make sure that they have a place to live. And there's also, you know, there's a lot of mental illness. There's a lot of addiction challenges, to put some resources around as well. You know, a lot of people in pain.
A lot of people without hope. It's been my diagnosis. Just like it doesn't make sense to, you know, go to this part-time minimum wage job to afford half an apartment to, for what, you know, what's the end game there? So they'd rather go it their own way.
Yeah, no, I think it's sad, but it's true. I think, you know, a lot of people, and I think, you know, to some extent, as we've just gotten bigger and as a society, we don't watch out for the people on the margins as much as we used to.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, trying to keep in our mind when you see somebody on the streets that that's a human being.
Yeah.
You know, that's somebody who's, you know, who's suffering, and you know, it's not like they're having a great time lying there on the street.
Yeah.
And to be able to empathize and have that sort of, you know, man, what have you been through that has gotten you to this point? And, you know, how can we help you? And I hope we get there as a society. At least as a community more, at least are able to, get people housed. I think that's the first step, there is a bunch of hotel conversions and low-income housing that's on the in the works right now.
Yep.
Particularly in Eureka's got, you know, the parking lot conversion propositions going, and so hopefully that will help take some of the pressure off and allow us to deal with those people. And I think, you know, the acknowledgement of some of the racial trauma over the years can allow some healing for a lot of people as well. And, you know, hopefully is allowing, you know, the Native community to prosper more and allowing the Latino community to feel like they can live here safely. I think there's there's still a lot of work to be done, but
so we're getting near about the time that we have for these things. But I was just going to ask, you know, it's been a crazy couple of years. What does the next 5 years look like for you, Patrick? What are you going to tackle?
I think what I'd really like to focus on is, expanding some sort of music education.
Okay.
I used to call it the folk school.
Yeah, I was gonna say what is the status of the folk school? Because as you say, the Folk Life Society used to have this school. I don't know, did it fall away during pandemic or
it fell away a little bit before then.
Okay.
It was a more ambitious project than we were ready for. I mean, the Folk Life Society, our annual budget is probably less than $25,000 a year. Doesn't really allow us to pay for somebody to, you know, coordinate something like that. But I think we're looking at some partnerships with, you know, potentially the Sanctuary, maybe with Humboldt State, with Arcata Playhouse, and, you know, find a way to be able to offer free or low price classes, workshops for people to be able to learn how to make music. That's where I want to go. That's really why I got involved in folk life originally.
Yeah.
I think the festival to some extent can be a distraction from that mission. Though we, you know, we will have the workshops there as well. So I think that's where I want to focus. You know, I also, you know, want to continue to improve as a musician. I think one thing that you learn as you become a better musician is that you can always be a better musician.
Yeah.
You know, like there's no end to how you can improve. And I'd love to inspire people to get passionate about it. And I think there's a lot of opportunity. So that's where my passion is at this point. And
you keep picking up all of these different stringed instruments. Have you ever considered a horn?
No
interest at all.
I play a little bit of blues harmonica.
Okay. Yeah.
And I've pretty much ruled out playing fiddle. The bowing is probably too hard, but I think you know, there have been many people who've suggested I might benefit from focusing as opposed to trying to play six or seven instruments at once.
Yeah, but what fun is that?
I know.
Yeah.
I do play a little piano. So that's my
also a stringed instrument.
I was just gonna say you can argue that.
Okay.
Technically you're right, Steph.
Thank you. I know a little bit.
Steph knows how a piano works.
I do. I have seen.
Do you play?
Not really, but my dad did. He was a piano player.
Yeah. So I think the key word, Steph, is play. I say this to people all the time.
Just,
you know, like the idea of music is to have fun.
Yeah.
Just hit that thing. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, so like, you know, if you sit down at the keyboard and you know, hit a bunch of notes, you're playing.
Well, then, I do play. My 2-year-old actually plays the keyboard really well.
Plays the hell out of it, yeah.
She does. I actually have a great video of her naked playing the keyboard while playing the harmonica as well. And so I'm really...
she's ready for the folk life stage, at least.
Yeah.
I think we want her to put her clothes on.
Well, okay. I mean,
scandal.
Maybe. But I hope, I really love hearing you talk about, you know, expanding music education, because like, I just can't wait until I can start putting her in music classes and dance classes and these things that are just so, you know, even if you don't really, you know, go anywhere, you know, if you don't take it to like a professional level or anything, you know, just learning to play a little bit of music has so many benefits, it seems like, and it's such a great thing for kids to get to do. And I really look forward to that.
And I think it builds community.
I
think it really does. I think that, you know, if you think about some of the greatest times you've had, there was probably some music involved.
Of course. Definitely. Yeah. And it's a collaborative art form, you know. People do play alone too, but you know, especially when it comes to something like, you know, folk music, that's not, you know, it's not the kind of thing where we go and pay money to just watch some masterful, you know, person play something by themselves. It's like it's always about people coming together and playing music together and listening to each other
and supporting each other. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Well, for those listening, you can watch people come together in Blue Lake this coming week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 3 chances to experience the return of the Humboldt Folklife Festival.
The triumphant return.
Yeah. And again, yeah, Patrick, we thank you for coming in and spreading your passion for said festival and the music it presents with us here today.
Oh, my pleasure.
Okay, well, thanks again to Patrick Cleary. I hope that we're not fired. thank you so much for coming on and talking.
Yeah.
I think which that we did part, okay. Which part, so.
Which part do you think he would fire you over, Steph?
I don't know. I don't know.
Were you, where you were gracious enough to have him on your podcast?
Right. Well, the part where I wasn't.
Talk about the things that he's passionate about.
The part where I wasn't even sure if I've been to the Folklife Festival or not.
Well, like, there is that.
He was a kind of. But I'm definitely planning. I'm definitely planning to go this coming weekend, probably on Saturday, because it's conveniently free. And also, I think it'll just be a fun time to bring the kiddo and get her to dance around in that beautiful little amphitheater and maybe hit the river after or something, you know. Yeah. Like I said, Blue Lake. It's the best. I love Blue Lake. I wish that I lived there, honestly, but it's a little too far from stuff. For me, but maybe in the future. Anyway, did you know, Andrew, that today was also the 99th episode of Humboldt Holding Up?
Yeah, I did know that.
We've been doing this for a while, man. We need to
99 weeks. plus the weeks we slacked off.
Yes, exactly. The podcast that has managed to do 99 shows in like 200 weeks. But we're going to have to get something really special for our 100th episode. So you won't want to miss that.
Well, that's why don't put that pressure on.
It's just I don't know. Show. But I just want to make sure people listen. You know, it's a 100th episode. You gotta listen.
Yeah. All right. Do that, people.
Okay.
Well, all right, we'll see you next week where something crazy is going to happen. All right. Bye.
Once again, we want to remind our listeners that Humble Holding Up is generously sponsored by the North Coast Co-op. You know, as somebody who lives at Arcata and works in Old Town, I spend an awful lot of time going to the co-op, both for my grocery shopping and lunch eating needs. Yeah. What about you, Goff?
Well, I mentioned the salad, but the other thing I get often is I get the sushi. You know, they got the sushi stand there, and I go and I'll get the poke bowl. You ever had the poke bowl?
Oh yeah, I love the poke bowl, and I also love the popcorn tofu. That's a fan favorite, I'm told. Very popular in Humboldt County. They refer to it as hippie crack. Am I not allowed to say first. That?
No, I think it's great. I think you've personalized the product, and everybody's going to rush down to the North Coast Co-op to get that hippie crack.
That's right. Check out the North Coast Co-op, Humboldt's organic community-owned grocery store since 1973. Mike Goff, you're like kind of a gardener or like a landscaper of sorts, aren't you?
You have some goats.
Okay. Well, a lot of folks in Humboldt County are, and for those people, a great place to go check out is Humboldt Hydroponics. Yeah. You know of this? Yeah, they're over on 1302 Union Street in Eureka.
That's by Broadway Cinema.
Yes, that is right. And these guys are very knowledgeable. Their staff, they're familiar with Humboldt's climate, so they can help you with your indoor and outdoor growing needs, whatever those may be. They got lighting, soils, pH solutions, fans, trays, all that stuff. That's stuff.
Handy.
Exactly. Yeah. So you got to check them out. They're locally owned and operated.
Now, if I buy a big old bag of soil or whatnot, am I going to have to haul that myself? If I put it in my truck myself, I mean, is what I'm getting at there.
If you feel like you want to do that to help get some muscles, then you can. Yeah. But no, you don't have to do that. That's one of the other great things about Humboldt Hydroponics is the staff will help you load up your truck. They'll even help with a curbside pickup, you know, if you want to do that. Okay. Just give them a call. Give them a call to figure out how they can help you. It's 707-443-4304.
Humboldt Hydroponics, helping you with all your growing needs.